More analysis, but no paralysis here. When 81% of the evangelicals give to Trump, we've got to be talking about, well, hate speech and the rightful place of our faith and the tongue of all things. This is Father Voskin. I'm drawing the lines and connecting them between all of that, as well as our spiritual and emotional and physical selves. This is episode number 441 of The Next Step, and I invite you to take it with me.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
1 zillion. Remember that number? Remember your kids, right? A zillion. How many do you have? A zillion. No such number, they would tell us. But actually, we figured out there is such a number. We're thinking about that last week. A couple of you out there wrote to me, not about zillion, but about the concept of determinism and free will. And the idea that we do have free will. I really appreciated some of your responses, but the idea that we do have free will puts us in a unique position of literally having a zillion options. Like, you cannot count. There is no such numbering system that could count all of the possibilities. Like, for instance, think about chess games, okay? We were just talking about this a couple days ago. I had a chance to visit our friends. They're called Bipolar. Nothing to do with being bipolar, but a company they have, Bipolar, doing virtual reality. Just fascinating. Sevan and I had a chance to go out there last Saturday, and we were talking about this. These machines that, way, I remember early computing, the 1980s, machines that would play games of chess. And basically, the way they would program that machine would be to put in all of the possibilities. The algorithms would explain all of the different possibilities of a chess game so that you move a pawn one way. And now there is, well, a certain number of plays that the opponent could make. For instance, let's say you move the pawn forward a couple squares. Now, the opponent now has an opportunity, and I would imagine that it's that front line. What is it, 8 squares? So those pawns can move either 1 or 2. So there's 16 possibilities, and the rooks can move, right? And there is, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4. So basically on your first shot at a chess game, you have about 20. And I apologize, I'm not an expert. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. If it's not 20, I'm sure it's 24. If it's not 24, it's 16. Whatever it is, there's a certain number of options you have to play it. And so you can program a computer to look at all of this. Now remember, last week we were talking about free will and determinism. Is your life determined? Is it a question of fate? Is everything just determined and you just have to go through the motions? So that it doesn't matter really what you do. It's basically all written out for you. Or do you have that freedom to make a choice? Well, certainly when you think about artificial intelligence, about programmers, how you have to program artificial intelligent machines, and some very basic things, as I spoke about the chess game, you go back just a couple decades, 2-3 decades ago, and what they were writing those scripts and the algorithms that they'd come up with, there was a definite number of options, and, you know, you would take those options. Now, think about it in terms of human consciousness, about the options that we have, so that today you woke up in the morning, you had a certain number of options of waking up at 7 o'clock, your alarm goes off, and jumping out of bed. you have the option of waking up at 7 o'clock and putting the alarm clock back to sleep, right, so to speak. And you going back to sleep and waking up at 7:10, 7:15. And definitely it changes everything around you, because getting up at 7 as opposed to 7:10 or getting up at 7:30, there's a new set of circumstances, right? So if you had this grand designer, the fate, right? The determinist, the grand designer, the master chess player, so to speak, who's standing on top of everything, he has to take into account, he or she, excuse me, has to take into account all the variables. You waking up at 7 plus 1 second, 7 plus 2 seconds, and going into your bathroom and rinsing your mouth. Did you do that at 7:05? Did you use toothpaste just a small bit, a pea size as recommended? Did you put it like the commercial all the way across your toothbrush? Did you skip brushing teeth? Oh, don't tell me about that, right? No, we don't want to hear about that. Did you go into breakfast? Did you have breakfast? Did you just get into your car? Did you get into your car and start driving? Did you go down this particular street as opposed to another street? Was there traffic on the way? Did it hinder you moving forward? And so you get to your destination and so on and so on. Basically, there are billions of different scenarios. Just by virtue of the seconds, by virtue of your free will to make those decisions, billions of scenarios that would have to be programmed into a grand chess game, so to speak, to justify determinism. And that's where I get to the zillions, because it's beyond billions, because just the idea of when you were born had to do with the conception of you as a human being. And you go back to that, which took two other human beings to conceive you. And the conception of those two human beings depended on the cycles, depended on the will of two other, actually four other human beings, and so on and so on. And you could go back to the beginning of human time. And if this is determined, in other words, a grand chess game, if you had to put all those variables into a program, it not only is it overwhelming, beyond our comprehension, but you would be talking about a number in the scale of a zillion. In other words, just beyond anything that we could quantify. And I think this is one of the greatest arguments against determinism, is that it's just folly to really believe that it could all be programmed out. I know. Yeah, you're hitting me with Father Voskin. I thought you told us that, you know, just because we can't conceive of it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Well, yes, but think about what we're talking about. We're talking about a free will versus determinism. And if you go the route of determinism, how do you account for the free will of everyone around you? Or is it a giant chess game? Is life a giant chess game with 8 billion people today on this planet, and each of them is being driven in a certain pattern, is being moved in a certain way, and moved to their location that affects you? The Grand Chess Master. Anyway, how are you doing? It's good to be with you. I'm not going to talk about this. It was just kind of interesting because I had some really great, great letters about last week's show. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you enjoyed the topic, because that certainly is one of those mind benders and gets your head thinking. What's the expression that we use here at Epostle? It's like playing with your head. In Armenian, I love that expression called Chelkut Gagena, your brain stops. It's so wild and so absurd. And so when I get to the Chelkut Genal, I also think about zillion. It's beyond anything that we could think about. Anyway, I'm glad you're with us today. I'm going to share with you some ideas about what's going on here and affecting the entire world. I know last week was our first podcast after the election, after a very, very difficult election for us as human beings. And I played for you a very sweet little relaxer music last week. It was just because I was just fed up with the abuse, you know, of one side abusing the other side abusing the other side. And it was between Hillary and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. 1 week later, after the elections and a few days, here we are sitting here, and people are basically abusing one another in a very violent and awkward fashion. And you've got people going out on the streets demonstrating, saying he's not our president. Okay, then that's your prerogative to say that. But basically, there are certain rules and conditions that govern the election process, and they were followed. And so now, guess what? We have a new president. Okay, you may not like that, or you may think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But at the end of the day, don't we have to figure out how to put it all back together? Because just for the sake of civility, that's first, but just for the sake of continuing life. And this has always interested me. I don't know if you've been a fan of MASH, the television series. It was always very interesting that these people, there was rules of war. And one of the rules is that people get hurt. And so these kids would come in there to be, MASH stands for Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, I believe. But it's basically a unit of the armed forces. And these during war, they would set up and they would take care of the wounded. And it was always interesting to me that this was just a calculation. Basically, we are going to take over a city, we're going to take over a hill, whatever it may be, there's a calculation, and at the end of it, we should have this many casualties, this many wounded, and this many survivors to take over, blah, 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 blah. And so it's all calculated. Yeah, I know. We're getting back to the determinism. No! Basically, it's calculated as to how they're going to deal with it, because I reject determinism, because wouldn't the grand chess player want to have a non-war kind of game? And yeah, okay, yeah, you're making the point. I know, I got it, yeah. Then we shouldn't have used the analogy of chess. You're getting too way ahead of the game. Okay, let's back up a little bit, okay? So there are rules in war, and so people would calculate that there's going to be this many casualties. And so the hospital would be there to fix up these wounded and put them back onto the battlefield. And wouldn't the entire process just be a better process, a more efficient process, right? I mean, if all living organisms work towards the point of more efficiency, right, as science tells us, wouldn't it make sense that we work towards more efficiency and just eliminate the war in the first place? Enter in Armadoxy. Enter in his shoes. What are we trying to do? Let's get rid of the war factor. But it's so far, at least in human history, we've seen that it is the means by which conflicts are resolved. Well, in the same way, we see that at the end of elections, basically everything has happened. You've torn apart your opponent. Now you got to put it back together, because you got to figure out a way of living in harmony. And that's not happening. That's not happening. We've got to start addressing those kind of situations. And that's what we're going to be talking a little bit about in the second portion of today's show. Let me just finish up a little bit more business that this last couple weeks we've been going to different churches, and it has been just really beautiful. First of all, we were at the St. John Garabed Church in Hollywood, and it was very special because it was the last service to be celebrated in the building. Now, this is a historic building that was bought by the Armenian Church back in the 1970s, and I remember when it was first bought, I had the unique opportunity to organize the first youth group, because I myself was a youth, yes, believe it or not. And the St. John Church in Hollywood was bought from the Methodists, and it was a historical building. Actually, it did at some point get a historical landmark status. But it was back in 1994 during the big earthquake, which was called the Loma... Oh, no. This is a problem of living through too many earthquakes. It was called the Northridge earthquake, 1994. It damaged the structure quite a bit. And internally, seismic retrofitting was necessary. And it used to be the seat of our diocese up until 1994. And then the diocese, the Western Diocese, moved on from there to Pasadena, where I happened to be in 1996. So we had an opportunity to share our church with the diocese as its headquarters just before the new facility in Burbank was bought. So that history is, I've lived through that history, and here it was last Sunday, the St. John Armenian Church was celebrating the last divine liturgy. So after the seismic retrofit and everything else, it just had gotten too old, and it needed to be replaced. So there is a new church sanctuary, new church structure going up and should be completed, they estimate, by next year. So to make room for that, the old church building is coming down. And we went to the last service in that church. And I also had some opportunity for personal reflection that day, too. It's the church at which my father's funeral took place. So in my head, I went back to not only the beginnings of the church, to the sad days that we had shared there, as well as the good days. My mom had worked there in the diocesan building, and sitting there at my father's funeral with my mom on one side, my wife Susan on the other side, our family. It was a very emotional morning to go through that. Last Sunday, we were at the Holy Apostles Church. That's in Tujunga. Now, this one, just beautiful. It's a relatively new church. If you remember, back in August, I reported we had gone to the consecration of that church. And sadly, the parish priest, who had really sweat quite a bit on making this work, the night before the consecration, had fallen something like 30 feet from a ladder while he was doing last minute appointments to the sanctuary. He had fallen, broken his feet, and he was unable to attend the consecration. Anyway, so we had heard that he was out of commission. I had seen him a couple times in the meantime, but this last Sunday I went to the Holy Apostles Church with the family, and I said, hey, you know, this will be an opportunity to see the church and to at least see the priest. And lo and behold, we walk in and he's doing the divine liturgy. Now, we had heard that I'd seen him. He was in a wheelchair. We had heard that he was on crutches, but no, he was standing there doing the divine liturgy. And the only part was at the very, very, very end, he did not come down. Obviously, there's some steps that might have been difficult to deal with. And so he stood up at the altar. And I thought to myself, wow, this is pretty good. So I spoke to him afterwards. And he said he got a special blessing when he did the divine liturgy. Because afterwards I saw him, he was walking with the cane. Interesting, huh? When you do the divine liturgy, you don't need the cane. You don't need it. And I could vouch for that. Many, many, many Sundays where just in the morning you just do not feel like even doing anything. And you get up at that altar area and an energy comes over you unlike anything else. It's an energy that is different, an energy that comes from God. And I could vouch for it. It's happened. You feel the strength. And what you thought was impossible becomes possible in doing that. And certainly seeing Father Avedis Abovian is his name. He's at the Holy Apostles Church in Tujunga, California. We had a chance to be there and worship with the community over there. So all in all, this past few months has been just a kind of a nice experience being out there and visiting different communities, different congregations, and listening to people. People come up and share with me their thoughts. Especially, I think the biggest hit has been this AC-101. No matter where I go, people make references to it. So it is kind of fun having this mini, mini celebrity status. And I mean literally mini, because it's only within the Armenian community, I want to believe. But seeing some of the comments on some of them, I mean, on the AC 101, we have comments from Muslim groups. We have comments, positive comments from different groups outside of the Armenian Orthodox community. Anyway, that is what I've been doing for the last couple weeks. We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to come back with some thoughts about post-election. Let's call it a series 200, not the 101 series. Post-election, what's going on in the world? The intolerance that we have of one another, the ability to get out there and really mock people without shame, to be able to talk without shame. Does that bother you? Well, if you've been a listener to The Next Step to Armadoxy, you know that that's one of my pet peeves, is this language issue. But can we find a better dialogue, a better means to communicate with one another? Anyway, I have something that I think will talk to many of you. Right now, we're going to go to the song of the day. I'm going to pick something out from 35th Avenue, it's called. And it is called the Armenian Wedding Dance. And the reason why I'm selecting this is, last week we talked about the abuse that we're under, the language abuse, and we played something to calm us down. Today I want to talk about harmony, about finding that harmony in our lives, finding the ability to talk with one another, to share with one another. And if you think about it, Armenian wedding dance is exactly that. It's not only bringing a point to where your feet are in harmony with one another, but also your steps are in harmony with everyone else's. It's the harmony that a husband and wife must achieve for a successful marriage, right? That they need to, at some point, compromise to hold back and give of each other, give of themselves to each other, right? Weddings, that's the most beautiful thing. Two people coming together and realizing that there are imperfections on both. And you may not achieve that perfect state, but you now have somebody to go through life trying to achieve that. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. I won't get any more preachier than that. You want preaching? Come to my church service. Anyway, right now, the song of the day, it is from 35th Parallel, The Green Vine, and this is called the Armenian Wedding Dance. Enjoy. Thank you. 35th parallel, the Green Vine. That is called the Armenian Wedding Dance. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a pretty little number. I wanted to play it to talk about harmony, about our need to be in harmony with one another, and certainly marriage, holy matrimony, that sacrament is about the harmony of two beings getting together and living as one. As Christ tells us, you are no longer two, but you are one. And is that possible when we get beyond two people? Can we turn communities into one? It's certainly a dream, one that we've been called to imagine. Is there a world that we can imagine in peace? You either can imagine it or you can't. If you can imagine it, you have to work towards it, right? And if you can't, I guess that's a very hopeless state of events that you're at. We're going to be talking a little bit about that hopelessness, about that state of events that we find ourselves in. Coming up. A couple days ago, I got a call from a friend who runs the Abril Bookstore in Glendale. Abril Books, best place. You know, you want, if you're looking for Armenian books, anything Armenian, that is the place to connect, okay? Unsolicited, okay? There, nobody asked me to say this, but I'm giving you that endorsement. If it has to be the best bookstore there is, okay? So this is in Glendale. The owner, Arno, gave me a call, and he was just very, very upset. It's been now a week since the election, and to see this hate talk going on and being promoted, and specifically, he was taken by the tone that that hate talk had towards the Mexicans, an ethnic minority, and specifically against the Muslims. And if you've been following world events, and especially United States events, you know that during this past week, since the election of Donald Trump, in many cities there have been protests, but also acts of violence have been reported against ethnic minorities, against religious minorities. And so this young man, being in Glendale and being of Armenian descent, said that, how could I stand by? I think he hit his enough moment, right? We all have that enough moment where at some point you say, enough. That's enough. I need to do something about it. I need to bring my participation to this program. And so he got in touch with me. He said, what do you think about doing a demonstration out in Glendale? And, you know, one of the hard parts I have with Glendale is I feel like Glendale is already such a polarized community. There is so much negativity and prejudice against Armenians in that city. And among the Armenian community, there's prejudices and negativity that they have towards one another. So it's a very difficult thing. I almost feel like most commentators, when I say things like that, have you noticed in the aftermath of the United States election of between Clinton and Trump, you'll have commentators commenting about the media, right? The media did this, the media presented it this way, and they never consider themselves a part of that media. Well, you are part of that media, like it or not. You're part of that media, and you're part of that problem. So, too, and sometimes when I sit here and I say that Armenians do this, well, I am part of that problem, too, and I will include myself in there, too. There are just too many different factions. So he called me, and he said that, can we do something in Glendale? And I offered him a couple ideas before we went gung-ho and said we'd do it. But one of the ideas is that, are we willing to look at ourselves as part of the problem? Are we willing to talk about our prejudices? And number two, just to be ready, because people will be asking us, and what about you? What about your community? The bigger question is, what are you doing in Glendale about it? You know, like, it's an interesting idea. I mean, I'd understand if you went to Trump Towers and demonstrated there, but why in Glendale? Well, certainly because hate language, hate talk has manifestations in everywhere, and certainly Glendale. There are opportunities where people are hateful, despise ethnic minorities. Armenians have been an ethnic minority. In California during the 1930s, there was discrimination against Armenians in the Central Valley of California. Now look at it. I mean, most Central Valley is owned by Armenians. Wow, what a turn of events. Huh? Arno, the gentleman from Abril Books, was genuinely concerned and wanted to organize a demonstration. He is organizing a demonstration at City Hall this coming Saturday. But he asked me to give a prelude, a speech, and I'm going to be doing that this Friday evening at Abril Bookstores, and I'll definitely have a link on today's show notes. If you are in the area, please do stop by. But it's basically about hate speech, about when that enough moment has come to us. Specifically, the title is Countering Hate Before It's Too Late. I like that, huh? You know what? First time I had to say it out loud, then I realized, hey, it's a cute little jingle there too, huh? Countering Hate Before It's Too Late. Well, let's talk a little bit about that because I think it's important. When you look at an election like the U.S. election last week, in the past week, we're seeing all kinds of analysis. One bit of information that came out, and again, check our show notes. We'll have links to everything that I'm talking about. But one of the interesting statistics that came out, are you ready for this? Is that Trump, Donald Trump, captured 81% of the white evangelical vote. And without that vote, Hillary Clinton would have been president. So it's a very strong bloc. It's one that put him over the top. And interesting for me, and should be for you as a listener of Next Step, is that it is religiously motivated. Evangelical. These are the people who believe literal interpretations of the Bible. These are people who believe in being born again in Christ and voting for Donald Trump. And this is really an important point for me, that what I'd like to do right now as a general disclaimer to the rest of what we're going to be talking about, let's try to cut the person from the act, because I want to believe, and I swear I would do the same thing, no matter who it is. If somebody came out with this kind of hate talk, it's not about Trump. And I said a few minutes ago, right? Trump is the president. He's legitimately elected, whether you want to believe in an electoral college system or not. That is the rules of the game, and that's how he was elected, okay? So live with it. It's not about let's get Trump out of there, but to hold him to accountable for the words that he speaks, because those words are important words, they're strong words, and they change people. They affect people. It's St. James who makes the point about they steer people. They move people. Listen, this is from St. James, the letter of St. James, chapter 3, verse 3. A lot of confusion, right, when you're reading off of screens. Anyway, he writes, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. This small little device in that mouth can turn the entire animal. Think about that, right? Or take ships as an example. Although they are so huge and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants it to go. Huge ship, right? Small little rudder. Well, we have a small little rudder. We have a small little bit in our life that affects a lot of things, steers us in different directions. He says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Now, this is St. James talking, not me. This is written way before Trump, okay? Before what's going on in the world today. 2016 years ago, this is written back in the first century, okay? And trust me, even before that, there's nothing uniquely Christian about this writing. But James is pointing to some important concepts that can really destroy people. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself is set on fire by hell. Well, that's exactly the bit. It's the same thing as the rudder. It steers everything. All kinds of animals, he writes, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by humankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is restless evil, full of deadly poison. Wow! With the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. I'm going to say that again. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. You're using that tongue to praise God, and yet you're cursing human beings. 81% of the evangelicals voted for Trump. They used their mouths to praise God, but they voted for a man who is basically criticizing and bringing down, cursing other human beings. St. James, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Now, why do you suppose St. James points to this inconsistency? Like, in other words, you don't go to you don't go to the ocean expecting to see fresh water there, or to taste fresh water there. You don't go to a river expecting salt water there. It's different sources, right? Same thing. You don't go to a Christian expecting to see divisive conversation. This is why St. John later on goes on to codify it in a sense. He says it very plainly and brilliantly. He says, you cannot love God who you don't see when you don't love the neighbor that you do see. Oh. What? Say that again? Okay, but I love God. Yes, I love God. Okay. But I can't stand my neighbor. I don't like him. I don't like her. It doesn't work, does it? I can't love God that I don't see and hate the neighbor that I do see. And it's so important that we understand that Christianity is not a pie-in-the-sky religion. It's about the here and now, about right now, about our ability to get along with one another. This is the value and the importance, the redeeming value of Christianity, the necessity for us to be able to live in this life today to the fullest that we can, to become the people that we need to become, not because of a destiny, not because of an ultimate reward, but because it is the right thing. That's our fullest potential. And just as everything in life, all life, wherever it is, always tries to reach its equilibrium, our equilibrium is at that point of peace, when we're able to harmonize, to be at one with one another. I want to put a link today to a very special video that was done by Heathrow Airport on today's show notes. Check that out. I'm not going to give a comment right now. Just check it out. Tell me what you understand about harmony. Okay, it's the Heathrow video. Harmony. That's what we're called to do. And unfortunately, we're at a point right now where there is no harmony. We're just destroying one another with this thing called the tongue. And people are spreading hate. They are spreading messages of hate. And I've been called to be a part of this demonstration. And let me tell you something, I can't say no. I can't say no because this hate speech is the first step towards evils that are incomprehensible. Evils that my grandparents saw as genocide survivors. Evils that began with hate speech. If you've looked at the 8 stages of genocide, what does it begin with? With that speech. I remember a few years ago, Ben Kayumba and his wife Stephanie, they stayed with us here in Pasadena. They were from Rwanda, and they spent the night at our house in preparation for the 777 conference. And that night, the four of us, my wife and I, Ben and Stephanie, we went for a walk. And excuse me for saying it, but on the floor were, on the street floor, no, nowhere close to us, there were cockroaches. And you should have seen the horror in Ben and Stephanie's face. Now, why? You say, why? Well, if you know anything about the Rwandan genocide, the perpetrators of the genocide had identified this group as cockroaches. They were referred to them as cockroaches. It's a very, very simple statement. It's a very simple word. But think of the implications. It's not merely an insult. It's not about, oh, you're a cockroach and I'll call you a monkey and I'll call you this and that. No. It's a straight-out derogatory term that leads to other things. How? Well, what do you do with cockroaches? I want you to think about that and answer me. You have an infestation of cockroaches. Who do you call? You call the exterminator. That's right. You don't keep cockroaches. They breed and they have disease. They've been known to outlast nuclear war. That's what they tell me. Cockroaches. Once you designate a group of people no longer human, you've dehumanized them, you refer to them as cockroaches, what does it do? It opens up the next stage, which now you can say, okay, they're cockroaches, they're not human beings, and we exterminate them. Do you see how powerful those words are? That's where hate language takes us. And before it gets too late, we need to stop it. We need to find the languages that are so important for us to be able to live in harmony. What do you think the Armadoxy movement is about? What is In His Shoes about? About finding those new metaphors by which we work so that we aren't out there hitting one another because he hit me first. We're not out there shooting somebody because they shot me first. But it's finding that language that Christ gives us the prescription. He says, you have been taught to love your friends, love your neighbors, and hate your enemies. I'm telling you something even higher. A higher calling. And that's to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Wow, talk about off the wall. Where do you get that from? How can you possibly love your enemy? And Jesus goes on to say, it's so that you can be complete. You can find that fulfillment of your life. And if you think about it, now on just very pure rational terms, right? Think about what this all entails. Well, basically our instinct as human beings is to repay goodness with goodness, badness, evil with evil. And that's just very human. There's nothing unusual about it, right? Somebody does good for you, somebody does a favor for you, you are inclined to do something good back to them. Somebody does some evil to you, most probably you do one of two things. You either ignore them and hope it goes away, or you do evil back. You retaliate. That's the usual course. That's human. That's okay. It's a human reaction. Good for good, evil for evil. Now, if somebody does good to you and you repay it with evil, what is that? That's dastardly. That's demonic. That's satanly. That's unheard of. Somebody does good to you and you repay that with badness, with evil? Oh, yeah, that's in the devil category, right? Okay, so what's the opposite? Somebody does evil to you and you answer with goodness, with love, with compassion. What have you done? Opposite? That's the divine category. That's God's category. And that's what we're called to do. Be complete, says Jesus. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. That perfection, he goes on to describe, is seen in nature. He makes, your Father makes it rain upon the good and the bad. He takes care of the good and the bad. He makes his sun shine down on the good and bad. So if God, who is absolutely perfect, does not discriminate, who are we to discriminate, curse, and even hate our brothers and our sisters? It's been a really, really rough couple years, particularly this last several months in preparation for the election. A lot of name calling, and now, unfortunately, just like a MASH unit, we have to pick up the pieces, sew it back together, and put it back out there. But we can't put it out there so that it gets hit again and it gets bruised and beaten again. We need to rise above that. That's why I've made a call to you several years now. Forget about politicians. Forget about politicians. I got to tell you something funny. I just thought of it. Somebody actually the other day, I saw this post, had posted Donald Trump as our new president, and had asked Armenians to refrain from criticizing him because it might affect whether Donald Trump recognizes the Armenian genocide or not. Can you believe that? This is what they were concerned about. Time for a defriend? I wish I could. I don't work that way, but I should. What is that? Do you think these people really care? You think it's their concern? Get with the program, folks. They don't care. Be done with it. You need to care. You need to be the first proponent of the things that are important in your life. And hate, hateful speech, borders, delineations, they have no place in a world in which we're living and trying to build, one which we need to start building about harmony and about peace. Let's take a break right now. I'm going to let Susie make her announcements, but stick with me right afterwards. I've got a bunch of great, great announcements to make. Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of our listeners for your wonderful prayers, your thoughts, your words of encouragement. They go a long way, and of course, for your donations. They make the difference over here, and it's because of those donations, because of your prayers, that we are able to expand and reach out to so many different parts of the world. Listen, before I go on, I want to share with you that tomorrow, Friday, probably by the time most of you in the world will be listening to this podcast, there's going to be a new installment on AC 101, and I haven't seen it yet, but it's supposed to be really good. It's probably one of the most popular of my Bible studies that I do. It's the comparison of Thanksgiving with the Holy Eucharist. And this one is going to be done, like Adam always produces those cool little shows where he's got me in berets and riding cars and all kinds of stuff. I don't know how he does it. It should be pretty good. From what I understand, I talked about Grandma's House, and let's see what he's going to do with the graphics. But that's coming out Friday, usually comes out right around noontime here on the Pacific Coast, Pacific time. That's number one, so there's an opportunity there. Number two, this Sunday, His Eminence Archbishop Barkev Mardirosyan is going to be at the St. Leon, Serpos Revontians, the cathedral in Burbank. If you happen to be out in the area, this is an opportunity to see one of the greats, a living legend, Archbishop Barkev of Artsakh. Finally, I'm very pleased to tell you that beginning next Monday, we start off the Advent season. Now, Advent is the preparatory time between now and Christmas, between the Nativity. And on Advent night, the first night of Advent, Monday, and every night following, weeknights, every weeknight following, we are going to have Vesper services at the St. Nishan Chapel inside the St. Leon Cathedral. That's in Burbank, California. I can't wait to start them, because we're going to start them not at the usual time for evening services, 10 o'clock at night. The idea is that, hey, as young people are on their way home after coffee shop, after studying, they'll have an opportunity to end their evening, end their day with a prayer, with a meditation. And this is a new pilot project that we're trying, and I think it's going to be greeted with a lot of success. So I need you to pray for that one. That's a very, very special one. But while we're talking about young people and getting together, we have an incredible youth rally and Christian conference coming up in March. Now listen to the dates carefully. I told you something else and won't repeat it here. It's March 10th, 11th, and 12th. And this is going to be at the Diocesan headquarters. And the reason why we changed the date, are you ready for this? You're going to hear it first. His Holiness, the Supreme Catholicos and Patriarch of all Armenians, Karekin II, is going to make a special trip to be with us on the final day of that conference, to listen, to greet, to bestow his blessings, and to celebrate the Divine Liturgy. I mean, I cannot be more honored that a Catholicos of all Armenians is going to come down to be in Burbank for this event, and I hope you'll be there as well. That's March 10th, 11th, and 12th. Check our show notes. There is a link to the website where you can make reservations. I would suggest you beg, you borrow, you steal to get out to be at this event. It is going to be a one-of-a-kind event, and you're not going to want to miss it. This is Youth Rally and Christian Conference. The name of it is called Reclaim, Embracing Our Faith in a Changing World. Now, let me tell you also about Reclaim. I think it's an important name. It's about us reclaiming the church, the treasures of the church that rightfully belong to us, and it's for the church to reclaim our children, to reclaim them will reclaim what rightfully belongs to the church. So I'm going to ask you, please pray for this. If you can get out there, please do. Okay, March 10th, 11th, 12th. There is a link on our show notes. Actually, if you can't wait for the link, it's embrace-faith.com. And you'll find all kinds of information there about what we're doing, as well as application and registration forms. Let me finally conclude by saying that there is a small price on it. If for any reason you're unable to make that commitment, just let me know. Drop me a private line, info@epostle.net. Just say you want to get in touch with me and talk about that, or share with me, and be certain. I've instructed all those who answer our emails that anything that comes about that is to just shoot it to me personally, and I will personally look at that, okay? That wraps it up for today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. I want to invite you to get involved with us throughout the week. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, at all of the usual places. And, of course, on the mothership, inhisshoes.org. Yes, the website, the mothership. I look forward to hearing from you. Also, if you feel like sending us an email, it's at feedback@epostle.com. At epostle.net. Wow, have I forgotten my stuff or what? That's a good way to end today's show. We haven't forgotten how to end it. I want to thank you for joining us. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off power! Top limits.